his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number two for this Thursday, November the 20th, 2014. It's Primetime Sports, coast to coast on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. Bob McCown, Ken Reid in the studio. Nick Taylor, PGA Tour winner, will join us in a bit. It's Canada Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated next hour, along with Glenn Healy from the NHL on Sportsnet. But first, he is the, I think, still the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays. A nice $82 million contract in his back pocket. Russell Martin joins us in studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So how's today been?
It's been good.
What you expected?
I didn't know there was going to be that much media.
Really?
There's, you know, both English and French, a good combination.
Yeah.
So that was really, you know, my first time handling that. It was fun, man. I enjoyed it.
Did you spy just how many French media showed up? I mean, every second question seemed like it was French media.
Yeah. I think TVA, RDS, you know, the whole gang was there.
When you go through a contract negotiation, this one specifically as a free agent, do you let your representatives do the deal or do you want to follow along with them? Do you call them on a daily basis? Do they call you on a daily basis? Well, this is what happened today, that kind of thing. Or do you back off and say, let me know when we're close?
We definitely kept in contact. My agent, Matt Collarin, did a great job of keeping me posted on everything that was going on. He just really wanted to know, you know, what my thoughts were and kind of just, you know, filled me in with, you know, where things were heading. And you know, as the process went along, kind of felt like I kind of knew it was a bit clearer where I wanted to go, you know, the further we got down the road. But he did a great job and got me where I wanted to be.
Did you, when this thing started or before this started, when you knew you were going to go to free agency, was Toronto on your list?
I kind of thought of the teams that were in need of a catcher, like who needs a catcher. I'm not going to say that it was Toronto's most urgent need, but it definitely felt like
it could have
been a good spot for me. LA was in there. I think Chicago, the Cubs were in there, and Pittsburgh were there too. So those were pretty much my main targets, I would say. And then when, you know, I heard that there was interest from Toronto and those other clubs, it just, it made it hard, meaning because I definitely, you know, I played in LA for 5 years, so
yeah.
I definitely felt like I could have went back there. Chicago was a great city, and Toronto being at home, you know, was a good fit too. So it wasn't an easy decision by any means, but Toronto really stepped up and made it happen.
Were you surprised that the Blue Jays were interested?
I don't know if they think. Surprise wouldn't be a good word. Surprise that, you know, they typically are not a team to throw, you know, that large of a contract to anyone, really. So I'm definitely grateful for that and you know, definitely want to help the team move in the right direction. So, but I was impressed.
You're a bright guy. You're aware of what's going on. How important, I mean, look, it's about money. And nobody begrudges that. How important was it that there were pieces here that would give you a chance to win?
Absolutely. Well, just, you know, the team itself is an exciting team. You know, offensively, it's just, you know, you watch the highlights and last year, you know, you look at the lineup and it's, you know, if you're catching back there, which is what I do when I call a game, you know, it's not an easy team to call a game against, because I know when I was in Pittsburgh, we played the Blue Jays for a series there. And, you know, it's a tough lineup. I mean, every hitter has an opportunity to hit the ball out of the park. Everybody, you know, can produce runs. So it kind of gave me a little bit of a headache there. But and on the pitching front, it's really my strength, you know, helping young talent develop. You know, and I'm not saying I'm the answer to everything, but I definitely feel like I can help guys, you know, take guys in the right direction, make them understand, you know, their craft a little bit better. And that's always been, you know, a big part of my game, taking pride in the defense part of it and all the little subtleties of catching and pitching and all that that entails.
That's something we never see on the highlights. We never show, oh, man, he framed that pitch nice, or he called for, you know, a curveball there. Should baseball fans really appreciate that part of the game, that subtle part of the game?
I mean, I don't think they have to have an appreciation for it, but I definitely feel like it does impact, you know, wins and losses, you know, at the end of the year. Really, I mean, I think fans should just appreciate winning, you know, winning and that's what it's all about. And if I can help the team do that, then I've done my job. And I definitely believe in the fact that I can help the team win. I'm just going to have to go out there and prove it. And I can't wait for that opportunity.
You have an interesting staff projectedly, and we don't know what it's going to look like by the time we get to February in Dunedin, but you've got a couple of veterans in their late 30s at the top of the rotation, and you've got a bunch of kids. Is that – most people wouldn't think that's necessarily an ideal mix. How do you view that?
I don't look at it as you know, what age are these guys, or, you know, I just look at each individual and then I kind of build a plan on, you know, the team that we're facing. So whoever it may be at the time, you know, let's say we take Burley, he knows what he's doing. You know, he's got an idea of his craft. He knows how to get guys out. He's got a good feel for it. He knows himself. So for him, it takes, you know, 5 minutes, go over a lineup. He knows what to do. He's almost probably going to, you know, lead me, you know, and take over the game plan. And obviously the pitching coach is involved and you know, there's other things that come into play. But let's say like a Stroman, younger kid, he's got great stuff, you know, good breaking ball, good velocity. You know, so I need to take the time, maybe spend a little bit more time with him in spring training.
Sure.
Get to know him, you know, what type of attitude does he have? You get some pressure situations. What's his out pitch? You know, things of that nature. You know, does he get amped up? Does his fastball elevate when he gets a little amped up? You know, what are certain things I can help with, you know, to make them, you know, more efficient, more productive. So, you know, and everybody, you know, can get better. So I'm just going to try and look for the little subtleties and try and help the team in that way. And obviously my job is to frame the pitch and block and control the running game and all those things. So, which all play a big part in baseball. So that's what I do.
Russell, you mentioned at the press conference today when talking about the Blue Jays staff that you're going to have to check them out on video and get to know the guys. Can you take me through that process of what you look for? Do you sit there with a notepad, or are you just making mental notes? Do you watch an entire game? Do you just break it down to pitch by pitch? How does that work?
Very visual. I'm just going to look at look at their stuff, which means, you know, look at their repertoire, what type of pitches they throw, what kind of movement they have on their fastball. How they like to use their fastball. Are they guys that move their fastball around the zone to get guys out? Are they comfortable elevating the fastball? Are they guys that use the sinker or the movement on their fastball, their breaking ball? You know, if they have curveball or slider, you know, how tight are their breaking balls? Is it a strikeout pitch? Do they have a good changeup? You know, so kind of know what their primary, you know, pitch is, know what their secondary pitch is, you know, where's their third best pitch, you know, how does that work? And then look how they attack lefties and righties, and really just, you know, everybody, they can throw the ball wherever they want, you know, at that level. Some guys are more comfortable staying in a certain area. I'm a big fan of pitching in.
Okay.
You know, I've always been a big fan. Getting guys uncomfortable in the plate, you know, getting them fearful of the fastball in can kind of induce some swings, you know, out in front of the ball when you go to the breaking ball later in the count. You know, that's just an example. But really, it's just like I'm the conductor back there. You know, I'm just trying to lead them, you know, through a game, and that's the kind of the part of the game that you can't really measure. You can't really, you know, call in a game. Like, what is that? There's no right or wrong pitch. There's just you know, the idea behind it, or, you know, the reasoning behind it, and I think that's my best strength, is calling the game.
Right, you're the conductor, but it's not like you're working with an orchestra. You're working with each guy at each time. How much is it? I asked this question of someone the other day, but how much of a job being a catcher is therapist, and how much of it is technical?
Yeah, I mean, some guys are you know, jazz. Some guys are heavy metal. You know, some guys are hip hop. You got to be able to adjust, And it's definitely a huge part. You have to have that chemistry with the pitcher. They have to believe in you. They have to believe that you're in there with them at that moment, every pitch. So there's a trust that has to be created, and it's not created overnight. And it's probably not, it takes more than a spring training. You know, it takes a whole season to really get a good feel, you know, for guys. But I've been in the situation before with the Yankees, where I've had to adjust to a new staff, same thing in Pittsburgh. And now I just, you know, have even more experience coming here. So I'm definitely excited for that.
Is there a certain type of pitcher you adjust to easier, say a heavy metal guy, as opposed to a jazz type of guy? Cause jazz, that man, I know your dad was kind of a jazz guy. So yeah. Does that help at all? Free flow kind of thing?
I tend to get along with everybody and able to adjust. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, you have to get along with your pitchers, you know, and it's, when you're, the main goal is to win, you know, you have to get along, and that doesn't mean you're going to get along every day and at every moment. You know, there's going to be some times that, you know, you're going to have to put your foot down or sometimes you just got to listen and not say anything. So, but it takes a while to get to know somebody. I'm not going to be perfect right off the bat, but you know, as I go along in the process, I feel like, you know, I've never really had any trouble, you know, getting on sync with anybody.
With Russell Martin, Blue Jay catcher. You said earlier you have a tendency, you like to have guys pitch inside. Somebody said after your signing, and I have no documentation whether this is true or not, that you may call more fastballs than almost any other catcher in baseball. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I don't know if I do. I'd never thought about it. I know that, with the Pirates, there was a lot of lively arms. So there definitely was, you know, a lot of usage of the fastball and moving it around the zone.
But you don't have a philosophy. In other words, philosophically, you don't believe that you use your fastball first and anything else second, necessarily.
I would say philosophically, I'm going to try and learn each individual and then build a game plan from there. I can't just say, like, this is what I do or this is what I like to do. Do it this way. I'm going to look at what the pitcher has and trying to work with his strengths. And then you kind of play that game of chess between, you know, the hitter's weaknesses and the pitcher's strengths and vice versa. And then, you know, build a game plan, you know, kind of on the fly like that sometimes.
You're 31 years old, going to be 32. One of the first things that was questioned by some was, well, at this point in his career, how many games can he catch? What's realistic? What's realistic for you?
I feel pretty good right now. I mean, I don't know what 31 is supposed to feel like, but I don't feel much different than I did when I was 27 or 28.
So you don't think there's a limitation at this point is, I guess, the answer.
Well, I mean, my goal is not to play till I'm 35, 36. I mean, I'm thinking I should have like a lot of gray and white in that beard by the time I'm done. So, you know, I'm going to knock on some wood. I don't know if there's some wood anywhere here.
Nah, it's all plastic
but,
glass.
Yeah. Nah, whatever.
We get the point.
Yeah. But no, I feel good at this point, and I don't plan on slowing down at you know, anytime soon. I know, like, if you look at averages and you look at, you know, catchers on average, they start slowing down. But I'm just me, you know. I can't really compare myself to an average. You know, hopefully I get that average up a little bit, you know, by the time I'm done.
You have a unique scenario on this staff, and that is you have a knuckleball pitcher, a full-time knuckleball pitcher in R.A. Dickey. There's no way we can sit here and know whether R.A. will be part of the organization come February or not, but let's operate under the assumption that he is. Have you caught a knuckleball? Do you feel comfortable doing it?
The only time I got to catch a knuckleball, there was a guy in L.A., which he wasn't there for the whole season or anything. His name was Charlie Hager. He had a knuckleball. It wasn't quite as hard as Dickey's and probably dance as much as Dickey's. So I can't sit here and say, I'm going to have no trouble catching it because I've never caught it. You know, I faced him a couple times and I don't want to rub it in his face, but I think I hit a double in a gap or something. We were playing in Yankee Stadium. But I think I closed my eyes and hit it. But anyways, it's going to be a lot of work, I think. You know, it's going to take a while to get comfortable. You know, you got to get a new glove. You got to kind of switch your stance up a little bit.
Would you relish that challenge?
Yeah, I like challenges. I mean, it's, you know, it's if it's hard, even better. You know, it's it'll be something to look to work towards. And I definitely want to be in the lineup as much as possible. So, you know, I can't wait. I mean, I'm going to have to catch him quite a bit in spring training and get comfortable with him, probably play catch with him, just, you know, warming up. That'll be a way to get a feel for it. But I've never had an issue with catching the ball and the knuckleballer, you know, for the short amount of time that I've you know, caught a knuckleballer, hadn't been an issue. So we'll see how it goes.
You had one of your best offensive seasons of your career this past year. Was there a reason? Were you able to put your finger on something that you did, found, uncovered?
You know, a big part of it, I have to say, is a two-strike approach that I had. Kind of got back down to my early days in L.A. of just, you know, staying short, especially with guys in scoring position. Not over-swinging early in the count. Keep myself in good counts for the most part. And I, you know, there was a ton of at-bats where I remember battling back from two strikes, getting back in good counts, and either working a walk or you know, putting the ball in play. And that's always been one of my strengths, is being able to put the ball in play. I mean, I don't feel like I strike out, you know, a lot. I don't know, you know, what it looks like on the stats sheet or whatnot, but I feel like I definitely grind out at bats and I make the other pitcher work. So, you know, I think a big transition from past years. You know, when I got to the Yankees, I started swinging a little, you know, more aggressively, and it's not that, you know, it doesn't pay off. You know, you still produce runs, hitting home runs, but it was just, you know, it was the swing and misses, that pitches that were outside the strike zone that kind of got me, you know, in less good counts. And then, you know, you let the pitcher get ahead of you. You know, your average is going to go down. So I think the ability to stay within myself and just using the whole field, not trying to do too much, was a big reason for my average to go up and my productivity.
Are you a thinker at the plate? Are you trying to think about pitches? Especially given that you're a catcher, and I've talked to many catchers over the years, and I've had different reaction to it, responses to this question about whether you feel like you think too much as a catcher, wondering what's coming, trying to put yourself in the position of what are they calling on me now that I'm at the plate?
Yeah, there's pitches that I certainly look for depending on the count that I'm in. And the reason why, you know, I think it's helpful to be a catcher, you can kind of build a plan and understand what guys are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often it's the catcher that's calling the game, not the pitcher on the mound. But I'll give an example. You know, if I'm like in a 2-1 or 3-1 count, you know, I'll look for a specific pitch that I'm looking for. And if it's not the pitch that I'm looking for, you know, I have no problem taking it. And that's completely different when there's two strikes. When there's two strikes, I'm in straight, you know,
protect mode.
Battle, hand-eye coordination, you know, whatever you're throwing, it's going to be a short swing, you know, quick to the ball, and I'm going to try and hit a line drive somewhere. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, my two-strike approach compared to, like, a pitch that I'm looking for 2-0 to drive 3-1, it will be different.
I always stay in touch with my old college buddies. They're some of my best friends in life. One of your old college buddies is going to be on the field with you this year. Can you just talk about the relationship you had with Jose Bautista, how it started, and where you guys are at now, and how you see things working out in the clubhouse this season?
Yeah, Jose, we go all the way back from junior college, actually, in Florida, in the Panhandle over there, in Marianna, Florida, which is like right next to Alabama and Georgia, like where all those states meet. We worked hard. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I remember from Chipola Junior College. And he was, you know, one of the best workers, most dedicated, you know, hardworking guys, most talented as well too. So that combination is probably the reason why he's gotten to where he's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely helped me kind of just, you know, shape an attitude towards working out, and always was, you know, a big fan of how he went about his business. And I'm excited for the fact to get back on the field with him. He plays to win. He's a big time competitor, and he expects a lot out of himself. And that's why it's fun to be his teammate.
Have you guys stayed in touch over the years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We normally head back to Chipola Junior College, and we have like our get together or, you know, alumni weekend or whatnot. And we'll have like a home run derby. And I think a couple of years ago, last year I didn't participate, but like the first one we had, I beat him. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
All right.
Yeah.
For a small JC, that school has produced some ball players. What, like 14 guys have gone to the major leagues?
Yeah, I think so. I think Buck Showalter is actually part of the alumni as well. I think the year that I think me and Jose were on the team, I think there was like 13 guys ended up, you know, playing minor league baseball or getting drafted or something. It was so for a small town, small junior college, there's been some good baseball come out of there.
How'd you wind up there? Did they recruit you?
Yeah, they recruited me. I was with Team Canada at the time.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story because we're heading up to Edmonton. It's the Junior Olympics 18-under team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm playing on Team Canada, and they wanted our center fielder and our second baseman, so Ivan Nakarata and Eric Bernier, and they were their first picks. And I was getting recruited by other places as well, but I remember my dad talking to one of their guys, and they wanted Ivan and Eric to go on the team first, and I was kind of like the add-in. My dad was like worked out a deal where like if you get my son to go, you're gonna get all three guys.
Ah, one of those.
So they ended up being pretty happy that, the fact that they got me because, I played pretty good when I was over there and stuff. And
did all three guys go?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of the guys is right there. He's my main man, Ivan. He's watching right now.
Oh, he just gave you the old sign there. Nice stuff, Ivan.
Deuces.
Way to go, buddy.
Threw up the deuces right there.
So I heard you talking at the press conference today about your family. And, I mean, I love when you talked about that game that you used to play in your backyard. I think it was called Murder, She Wrote. Can you just talk about the role that your family played in getting you to this day? Because that's something that, the media, you might see it in a little sidebar story, but that's something that I really like. Because it's not like you just got here on your own. You do it on the field, but man, the support. Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, my mom is, the most loving, sweetest person, in my opinion, on the face of the earth. So she definitely has a lot to do with it. My dad spent, tons of time with me, and he was fortunate enough to have the time to be able to take the time to, go out on the field and play all kinds of games and kind of, shape my early days of baseball and competing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So many people don't have the time. They have to work, you got to put food on the table. So, it definitely, I'm grateful for that. Had a lot of fun out in the field. It would be every day, out on the baseball field, inventing a fun game, for me to have fun and get better in mm-hmm. some way. It was pretty creative with the games that we played.
Can you explain Murder, She Wrote to me? Because I heard a bit of it.
Yeah.
It sounded pretty cool.
Murder, She Wrote. It's any chain link fence, about whatever, 6-7 feet higher. So at the time we started playing that, I was probably 6 or 7 years old. You get an Incredible. So it's one of those like rubbery balls. You don't want to take a real baseball because you don't want bruises all over the place. What's mom going to say? So he stands about, 15, 20, maybe 30 feet away. And the goal is to just get in between the two posts. And he's trying to whip the ball and he can bounce it. He can throw it in the top corner. And my goal is to keep it from touching the back of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like diving left and right and scooping the ball. And so it's just really working, my reactions and it kind of, you start doing that at a young age, you almost feel like, it's part of you. So I started doing that. I started swinging a bat when I was 2 years old.
Wow.
And I, lived on the baseball field in the summertime, ever since I can remember. So yeah, if it wasn't for my dad, there's no doubt I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Maybe Murder, She Wrote has prepared you for catching a knuckleballer, I'm thinking. That thing kind of diving all over the place? I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's no, you got to catch the knuckleball to get better at it.
So exactly.
There's some repetitions that, I'm going to have to catch them quite a bit before I get comfortable, I'm sure.
Play hockey growing up?
A little bit of hockey.
Goaltender?
No. I put on the gear once in my life. Yeah, and it's, I think,
It
was caught on film.
Oh, no.
It was. And it's, glove side pretty good. Everything else, like the lateral movements and stuff, not so good.
Growing up, baseball fan of the what team?
Expos, but also Blue Jays. 92-93, so many memories from the playoffs. And growing up as a kid, I was an infielder for the most part. I played center field and caught a little bit when I was young, too. But I was a big, Ozzie Smith and Roberto Alomar. Fan. But from that team, back in the day, John Allroad, Pat Borders, Devon White, Kelly Gruber, you know, I can remember, you know, Joe Carter, all those guys that, you know, I have memories, the home run, you know, off Mitch Williams. It's, you know, who forgets that?
Pat Hankin was on with us yesterday.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a little bit of him at spring training. And he's been with the organization for quite some time and speaks very highly of your history and the potential for what you might be able to do with this pitching staff. And that comes from a pretty good place. He won that Cy Young. He's okay.
Yeah, he's pretty good pitcher, I think.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's cool.
What are your plans for the next couple of months?
A couple months. Probably going to split time between Montreal and Arizona.
Right.
I love to train, so I'm going to, you know, train, keep my body in shape, do whatever I need to do to get that part of the game right. And then, you know, I got a wedding to go to, an ex-Blue Jay. Travis Snyder is getting married.
Oh, right, really?
In Mexico, so I'm going to go check that out, see how that goes down.
Do major leaguers go to all-inclusive resorts? That's a question. So you always go to the all-inclusive one for $900 for the week, right?
I don't think they have to.
You know what? I made reservations and then like they canceled because I think there was like a, you know, there was like a hurricane or something. Okay. And then they had to do like a cleanup and they sent me an email saying that they, you know, they weren't ready. So I'm going to have to reschedule and rebook. So right now I have no place to stay in Mexico right now.
Okay.
So. Will you go to camp early this year? Will you go to Dunedin early this year? Because we know that pitchers and catchers do report early, but there are a bunch of guys that live down there, as you know, and they work out, you know, real early, starting early January, they get together.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that? Have you thought that far ahead?
You know, I haven't thought about that, but it's good that you bring it up. Now I'm gonna think about it, depending on who's there, and you know, I'm gonna want to get to know the pitchers, and obviously you can watch video and stuff, but it's not the same thing as seeing them live. So I'm definitely gonna think about it. I probably won't get there in January, but I'll be there in February for sure, early.
Well, congratulations on the deal, and welcome back to Canada, and welcome to the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're I think everybody's excited and looking forward to the 2015 season, and we assume you are too.
Definitely excited. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And we hope to see you again soon here too.
I'll be back.
Cool.
All right.
Blue Jay catcher, Russell Martin. Nick Taylor, PGA Tour Pro. Next, it's All Canada Hour. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Four before the hour, Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. McCown Reed. Lineup change. A pinch hitting for Don Banks, Alex Anthopoulos.
Number two.
Oh, no. Banks is going to be on. Anthopoulos will replace Healy. Who's on the program? No, I don't want all of them. I can't jam them all in. All right. So we'll do Banks, and then we'll do Anthopoulos. Excellent. I kind of got this figured out now. So we'll get Alex's take on the signing and where he's going next, and is there another, some thought that the Blue Jays have a shot at Andrew Miller?
All kinds of talk out there. So he's the man to talk to.
And denial that a contract or that any contracts offers are out there. So we'll address all of those things and more with the Blue Jays general manager in just a bit. A very interesting resume for our next guest. Seven years ago, Nick Taylor was the number one amateur in the world for 20 consecutive weeks. He and Adam Hadwin were like 1-2, I don't know, for that whole period of time. But it was an extraordinary time in Canadian golf because you had two guys coming who looked like the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this process that they had to go through, which is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. In spite of his success in college, Nick turns pro in late 2010, plays on the Canadian Tour, or PGA Tour Canada, they call it now. Does pretty well. But I think there would have been a sense, and I'm interested to hear whether he thinks this, there would have been a sense that the expectation was higher for him for several years. Well, the expectation was realized a few weeks ago when Nick Taylor gets his PGA Tour card and goes out and wins, and I think his second event as a full-time member of the PGA Tour. Nick Taylor joins us on the telephone. Nick, how are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Excellent. So tell me about the process that you went through between 2010 and technically, I mean, you could even argue to the middle of this past year when all of a sudden it changed. Did you do something? Did something click? What happened?
You know, all of last year I played really well. I thought I played Vancouver Golf here out in BC there, and that was kind of springtime, and had a lot of good results. And got some confidence going and kind of took that reins to PGA Tour Canada and played really well all summer. I didn't win, but I felt like I was in contention most of the weeks, and that got me into final stage at Webb.com Q School and took advantage of that, and that's what got me moving up into the right direction of the PGA Tour. And started off pretty well this year, but yeah, like you said, I was struggling in the middle of the year, and it was more of I was frustrated, but it was more of I wasn't scoring very well. I felt like I was playing a lot better than the scores were showing. And it was tough to stay patient, but it was kind of one of those things where I thought if I just kept at it, it would eventually kind of turn around, and it did. I started making more putts, shooting really low scores, and started to get results, and was able to kind of save my year and get in the Webb finals, and everything kind of turned around from there. I just kind of kept it going, and now we're where I am. So it's been pretty crazy the last 6 months.
Was your ball striking always solid, and you just couldn't get it in the hole? Was that what was happening to you earlier this year?
That's what it definitely felt like the last full year. You know, the beginning part of the year, I had a couple good results, and I actually thought that I could have won a couple of tournaments if I had been putting well or just made putts at the right time. And if I look back at those tournaments and the tournament I just won in Mississippi, I definitely was getting a few breaks here there in Mississippi that I was taking advantage of, and also making putts at the right time that definitely helped me win. So there's luck involved for sure, and also making putts at the right time, and I was able to do that in Mississippi.
For every golfer that struggles with the flat stick, and add me to that list, did you do something different? Did you find something different, or did just all of a sudden it start going in?
Maybe a bit of both. I changed putters, but it was immediate success when I changed my putter.
Right.
It was still a tailor-made putter. Just kind of wanted a new look and did that, and changed a bit of routine. So nothing major. It wasn't like it was anything mechanical. Just slight changes, and that seemed to work. And then once the putts start going in, you get some confidence going. And even if, you know, my stroke could have been worse when I was making putts, but if you feel confident on the green, it's amazing what can happen. So there wasn't a lot to change. Just kind of the ball started going in the hole, and you get confidence going. You keep making putts. It's kind of a snowball effect.
Nick, when people think professional athlete, they think glamour, they think, you know, first-class flights and all that, but can you just describe how your life changed when you won the Sanderson Farms Championship and what life was like before that, and maybe how it's, I don't want to say easier now, but, you know, you can pick your events now, things like that.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is having now essentially 3 years of where I know I'm going to be playing, I know what tournaments I'll be able to play into, and really from now on, it can only get better for the next few years. If I keep playing really well, then, you know, I can start to play in more majors and the big events. So it's amazing to have kind of that security and knowing what I'm going to be for the next 3 years and playing in tournaments like the Hyundai Tournament Champions. It's an incredible bonus to play an event, kind of start the year with no cut and some guaranteed money. So that's really nice there. And just, again, knowing my tournaments, you know, before – for the Sanderson's Farms. I didn't. I was just trying to play well to kind of improve my reshuffle number and get in as many terms as possible. But that's a lot of change there for the golf perspective. But I think me personally, nothing's really changed. Still kind of doing the same dumb stuff and being goofball. So nothing's really changed there.
Yeah, except you're not staying in crappy motels and eating fast food and sharing a loaf of bread with Hadwin, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's changed, but yeah, there's definitely more flexibility and not as much stress as, you know, say 6 months ago to 2 months ago to now. Even the web finals, you're trying to deploy well just to get your PGA Tour card, and from there you're really excited, but really it's kind of just a start. So about to change so fast has been pretty incredible.
I don't want to dwell on this, but was there ever a time over the last 4 or 5 years where you wondered about your future? Wondered whether this is what you'd wind up doing?
Yes and no. Never came to the point where, like, I don't think golf is for me.
Right, I understand.
There's definitely times I was discouraged and, you know, what do I have to do to get where I thought I'd be already? But, you know, going back to people that have got me there with coaches, the team that's around me has really been so supportive and draining if I've been discouraged or down, that, you know, maybe remind me of the past or encourage me for what's going to come. It's been a process for sure, but I think it's definitely made me stronger in the long run with having to go through a few years of the Canadian Tour and, you know, missing a Q schools and being frustrated, but it definitely makes you work harder and appreciate now what you have. So I think that's nothing I would change.
So, Nick, you go through that process, the ups and downs. You win on the PGA Tour. You get a $720,000 check that they give you right away. And I'm obviously assuming you go right to Vegas. Is that how you party that night? Is that correct?
I did not go straight to Vegas. No?
No? Were you in bed by 10 o'clock that night?
I don't think so.
No, it might have been 11, you know.
Yeah.
I stayed up a little longer than usual.
Good, good. So what did you do after you won?
I went back. There was a lot of stuff I had to do with the tournament. There was media, talking to some charities and volunteers and signing some stuff, and then went back, and Adam and I and then my caddy Mike Darby went for dinner and kind of relaxed a bit. I was extremely exhausted, so but it was different. I didn't have any family in town. My wife Andy was still at home and she was meeting me the next day to go to Mexico. So it was if there was my family was there, it might have been different circumstances if it was a bunch of people there that other than Adam and my caddy, they were really close. So that probably delayed the celebration for sure. But once I get home with family and everybody, it'll be fun to go out and celebrate and kind of reflect on the tournament.
What did your win mean, not for you, but for Adam Hadwin? I mean, he's long been thought about as, being one of the next great Canadians on the PGA Tour as well. What did Adam see? And did you guys, you know, did it mean a lot to the both of you just to see, hey, man, we can do this?
Yeah, he was excited for me. I think that'd be a better question to ask for him. But I think, it was just, we were actually staying together that week, and he got off to a great start this year, playing really well in Vegas. And next year was actually the first cut he had missed. So he's played very solid. So I think for a lot of guys, it's only a matter of time. There's so many good Canadian players coming up. Other than the five of us or six of us on tour, there's more that are going to be there, I think, very soon in the future. So I think I'm definitely not going to be the only one winning out there, and hopefully I can keep winning and they can win as well. So I think Canadian golf is very bright in the near future.
I know you've had some stops on the PGA Tour over the course of your still young career. Mm-hmm. You played the U.S. Open in 2009 as an amateur, mm-hmm. And played well. What's the difference? How would you categorize the difference between the guys on the web.com tour and the big tour? What jumped out at you, if anything?
That's the finding. There's not that much of a difference. I think if you're not out there, maybe just the average, you know, golf fan doesn't really maybe not comprehend that or understand. It's such a fine line between even the Canadian Tour, the web tour, to the PGA Tour, that you do need a little bit of luck and take advantage of opportunities you get. But you know, it's just there's a little more consistency probably, and you know the short game is probably is the difference you might see with, you know, an average web player who finishes say 6th or 7th on the money list compared to somebody who's 6th or 70th on the PGA Tour. I would say short game is the biggest difference, but you know, if you go watch the top 10 in the world, those are guys that'll definitely impress you and with all parts of their games, but there's such a fine line with so many guys that are not in the PGA Tour and right. Web Tour and Canadian Tour that it's just tough to get out there, obviously.
Is the work ethic different? Do you notice a difference in the amount of time guys spend on the range or, you know, around the putting green?
Not really. No, I think
about the same. Yeah,
I think guys stay in the PGA Tour for longer. They definitely have the routine and they've had it for so long that, you know, they know what they're doing. They know what is best for them. They know their game's the best. They know that certain courses are going to fit their games better than others. And that's, if they've been out there for 10 years, that's when they can really pick their schedule and take advantage of courses that they love playing. Where, take guys like Adam, Roger, and I this year, we really haven't played any of the courses out here. So
right.
A lot of times we're playing them blind, and that's what's is going to be great for me this year. I can pick my schedule, but also for the next years, if there's courses I love, then I'll go back there for sure. If not, then I can pick out new tournaments and try to find courses that I'll love going back year and year. So being rookies is definitely tough, but, you know, guys make it work.
You're the first Canadian since Mike Weir in 2007 to win a PGA Tour event. When I saw that stat after your victory, I was actually quite stunned by it.
Mm-hmm.
You thought that Graham Delatt would have won. Well, I know he hasn't, but you know, it's sure. It's been a while. I don't know if you realized how long it had been, but it's not easy to accomplish. We congratulate you, and we hope it's the first of many that you have over the course of your career. Well done.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining us. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
No problem, yes. Thanks for having me.
Nick Taylor, PGA Tour professional, PGA Tour winner.
PGA Tour winner. I sensed that you were trying to get some free putting tips out of Nick.
No, I just was interested as to what, you know, because he indicated that a short game, it suddenly clicked in.
Yeah, what was it?
And, you know, we talk so much about these guys have teachers, and they're constantly tinkering with things. And I just wondered if there was something that all of a sudden he went, you know, the ball's too far back in my stance.
Mm-hmm.
I got my eyes open. I should have my eyes closed. I'm putting forehand. I should putt backhand. You know, something. I'm looking for something.
What haven't you tried over the years? Have you ever tried putting left-handed?
Left-handed, side saddle.
You actually tried putting left-handed?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I have 29 putters. I used to have 31. I sold 2 of them.
I played with you. I didn't think your putting was that bad.
Well, it's not horrible.
It's not the worst thing
I've ever
seen.
It just doesn't go in the hole.
Right.
That's the problem.
Between the two of us, we're not very good putters.
Well, that wasn't a very good day on the greens, I must acknowledge.
Yeah, I sank, I think, the second part of the day, and that was it.
Yeah, you looked like you were going to tear it up.
Through 4, I was styling, and then you warned me, though. You knew it was coming.
I said, relax, pal.
Yeah, chill out.
The golf course starts at 5.
And it did.
And
it really started at 10.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will join us. I'm trying to get this straight here since the lineup has changed.
Alex at 6, Don at 6:30.
We got a Thursday night football game. Yuck. Chiefs and Raiders.
Go Raiders. They'll get a win eventually.
Oh, they don't.
How would you like to have a show coming up out of that game, Bob?
Oh, yeah, that's you.
That's me.
And then Alex Anthopoulos, managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, will find out what else he's got up his sleeve. All coming up on Primetime.